Stories are powerful. Powerful.
Welcome to the Rise, Recover, Live podcast, brought to you by The Phoenix. This is a space where people impacted by substance use can come to share their story of strength and resilience, get open and honest, and inspire hope and build community through shared experience.
We'll be talking to people in our community on their own recovery journey and shine a light on the topic of recovery in all its forms. Maybe you'll hear some of your story in theirs.
Let's show the world that together we rise, recover, and live.
Yo, and welcome to another bonus episode of the Rise, Recover, Live podcast. I am one of your two hosts, Bryce the Third, he, him pronouns. And today we're going back to Mobilize Recovery 2023. Mobilize Recovery is a dope conference, a dope convening. If you haven't heard any of the past bonus episodes these past couple of Thursdays, they're very short. They're story centric and you can dive in and pull out that energy and get on with the rest of your day. And so I highly advise you go back and listen because we've had some amazing stories on our bonus episode from this conference thus far. Today, I'm sharing a story that really touched my heart. I have a relationship with my inner critic. And at one point, I could not delineate between myself and the thing that was talking to me and telling me that I'm not good enough and I'm not doing well enough and I'm not doing enough. And then one day I came up with an acronym. I called him Sam. The acronym is SSAM, Sad, Scared, Angry Man. And so I'm at Mobilize Recovery and I'm meeting people like I do. I'm a social butterfly and I'm floating around. And one of another good friend of mine, Kath Delaney, she pulls me to the side and she introduced me to our guest today. She was like, I want you to see her book. And it's a book about the inner critic. And she calls her inner critic in this book, Sam. Imagine my delight when I'm like, whoa, I thought I was the only one that had this experience and somebody wrote an entire book on this experience. So it is my delight and pleasure to share our conversation in the podcast room with you here today. I hope you pull something out of it. And without further ado, Rosie Greenberg. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you.
This will be a very special. I've actually looked forward to this since our encounter earlier.
Same.
So real quick, just tell the audience who you are and where you're from.
I'm Rosie Greenberg. I'm an artist and facilitator, and I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, originally.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And what bring? Well, so before I, because I want to default to the questions that I've asked other people, but immediately I want to tell the story of how we met. A good friend of mine was sitting at the volunteer table with you and said, "You got to check out Rosie's book." I looked at Rosie's book, and the book is titled
"Everyone Has a Sam." What is it? Meeting the Inner Critic and Rewriting the Rules.
Everyone has a Sam. Now, those listening to this episode may be familiar with my Sam, because I've talked about it a couple of times on the podcast, where the Sam is an acronym for Sad, Scared, Angry Man, and I've used it as the title for my inner critic, and it has helped give me space between me and that weird voice that tells me I'm not good enough, or I'm not doing a good job, or I could be better, and inadequacy and all that other stuff. So imagine my surprise when I see that a book was written about Sam.
I loved that moment earlier when I said, oh yeah, I named my inner critic Sam. And you were like, me too. Like, how amazing is it to meet somebody else in the world who has A, named their inner critic, and then B, named the same exact thing? Amazing.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like I had to name it out of necessity.
Yeah.
And then I just picked the acronym because I'm, you know, I'm special. But it's like, it reminds me, oh, I'm either sad, I'm scared, or I'm angry.
Yeah. Did you pull out the acronym after naming it?
No, I think I went with like, what emotions do I feel when his voice is loud?
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like angry, I'm mad, I might be a little scared. And then I just jumbled them back up and it's like, oh, sad, scared, angry man.
I love it. So after I named mine, I told you this morning, but after I named mine Sam, I was reading some articles about inner critics and stuff, and I came across this thing by Daniel Siegel, who's a psychiatrist, mm-hmm. or psychologist, and he writes that it's the scan, alert, and motivate system. Mm. That's part of its role is to be a risk manager for us, to scan the environment, to alert us to danger, and then to motivate us, S-A-M.
This is so interesting. And even in that, though, how does that serve us if it's overstimulated?
Right. So I think they were created, these parts of us, we could call it, were created when we were super young to scan the environment to figure out, like, what are the rules? What does my family expect of me? Maybe our families expected us to be quiet. as kids, or to be super creative, or to be articulate, or whatever the thing was in our families, they alert us to the danger of not being that thing, the danger of not belonging, which, you know, if we go back to cave people times, was existential. If you didn't belong in your tribe, you got eaten by the lion.
Yeah.
And so conforming or being like other people is actually a matter of survival when we're young. And it can still feel like that. Mm. It can actually be that, and it can still feel like that. So I think these parts kind of are created to help us survive, to help us fit in, to help us belong in our families and our cultures. And then they go on, they go on overdrive now. So what served us then to belong, you know, doesn't necessarily still serve us.
Yeah.
And then also, the cultural messages that they're taking in are cultural messages that are coming from capitalism, from white supremacy, from patriarchy. And so are, by kind of definition, sometimes hurtful in that way. So even though we do belong and we survive and we are participants in all of that culture, those can hurt us as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for me to be who it is that I am, like, I've had to short circuit that voice. There's been a lot of tools that I've come across to be able to short circuit that voice, finding community that was empowering, retelling my story, coming up with something that gave me dissonance between me and that voice, figuring out how I fit in the midst of the systems that exist, kind of like that learning to see a new color for the first time. It's like, oh, like, you know, I thought all I had to do was bootstrap and just, like, you know, pick myself up. You know, but in all actuality, there's this thing, and this is a very real thing. And if I look back, like, it's been installed before I was even thought of being born, and I've been fighting against that. And now that I see it, it's not like it's disempowering. It's just like, oh, this allows for me to navigate the playing field a little bit better now because I'm aware of it. And so there's been a process of learning how to equip myself to short circuit that voice. But does in that process, for me, that voice still persists. And so how do you show up in the midst of that voice persisting for you?
I think there's something beautiful in confronting that dissonance and confronting it and saying, like, oh, it's not my fault. It's not in me. It's out there. And just sitting with the dissonance of, and then sitting with, how do I want to be? I think for me, I thought for a long time, like, I just had to be perfect. I had to, for me, it was like these high powered academic environments.
Yeah.
And like, I'm going to keep going. I got all the way to Harvard and then was like, I don't feel anything. Like, I don't feel comfortable here. I don't feel like anybody can really see me in the ways that I want to be seen. And so it was sitting with the dissonance of like, I achieved to the highest levels that I could. And then I still felt really empty. Mm. And that was where I felt the most empty. And so sitting with that and then realizing, okay, like, nobody's gonna allow me to be me unless I step up into it.
Yeah. Yeah, and even in that, like, what are we? You know, like, what am I? You know, and, like, that's what the dissonance allows for, is I'm not this. So when I hear that voice, it's like, I'm inherently incapable. I'm inherently inadequate. Like, you know, and in that, it... there's this identity that's baked in that I can't do anything about because I'm just, like, I'm that, you know? So, like, having practice that allows for me to give space to those thoughts allows for me to redefine my identity. And you know, if we talk about recovery in a space like Mobilize Recovery, that's really what we've done. There's been so many people that have sat on this couch that's like, you know, these things that I once thought were shameful, like, these are the things that have empowered me to be able to be in these spaces and be a superstar and be that thing that plants the seed for other people to make the change in their lives. And so that reformation is I think it's a practice that's consistent. It has to be, because wherever I land, it's still a question of who do I see myself as being? And then that voice comes back and it's like, well, you're, and it's like, am I, you know?
Yeah. And it's, there's this thing of like, who do I see myself as being? And then I'm turning around and helping other people to see themselves. And so I see myself now as somebody who helps other people and somebody who is supporting other people. And so it grows and grows with the, you know, it's constant redefinition, but constant growth as well, which is, yeah. And it's a beautiful thing about the recovery movement and the recovery community is that that's what we do, is we recover. And then before we're even fully recovered, part of our recovery is turning around and not turning around, but like is reaching out and supporting other people and kind of being part of this broad ladder of shared support.
And with that being said, what brings you to mobilize this year?
The recovery space, I'm not in recovery, I say, from drugs and alcohol, but I am in recovery from mental health challenges and depression, and also from living in a capitalist, cis, heteropatriarchal, white supremacist society, which I think we're all hopefully in recovery from, on the upward trends of that, we hope. So I studied public narrative years ago, and Ryan had studied with my mentor and friend, Marshall Ganz.
Okay.
So I initially got connected through that, but the first year I was in a really dark place, and I had been pretty depressed for about 10 months before I was supposed to go to Las Vegas for Mobilize. And I was running this group of coaches. We were doing a narrative training. We were training 30 people from within the Mobilize community to coach public narrative. And I wasn't sure I could do it because it was at the point where I was kind of dissociated. Like I felt like I was sitting 3 feet behind myself, watching myself go through the motions of my life that summer. And we started the training, and it was also, I had also like reworked my medication that I was on and like started a new form of therapy. But it was more than the medication and more than the therapy. It was helping create that community of coaches and step into the public narrative work in Reno, Vegas, that felt like it was this new beginning for my own life and the way that I worked. And it was like coming out of that bout of depression. I feel like there's going to be more probably, but so that was really huge a couple years ago. And then just every year Mobilize has been this space of like life-giving connection. And I see myself in new ways coming into the community. And I feel like I get to share and, just share whatever new work I'm working on. And, and I loved this year getting to kind of be a part of the heart work that was happening, I think, through the past couple of days, through helping people work through the inner critic piece.
Mm. Yeah, it does. I can't remember exactly who came and shared, but they shared about your workshop that you did, and they talked about drawing out their monster, inner monster is what they called it, on a piece of paper, and how much that helped them to see the voice for something that wasn't them and that was something that was outside of them. And so, like, what was the motivation behind creating that workshop, and why specifically the inner critic this go around?
It's on my heart and soul in this moment, but you were saying that the moments of articulating it are really valuable. And that was for me when I started healing from Sam, was because I just sat down and I started writing everything he was saying. And the more he said, the more I could write. And so I was powerful either way. If he shut up, I was like feeling great. And if he talked more, I just had more to write. And so I realized, oh, this is a hack. This is kind of a workaround. So that was the book. And then also just like really wanting to bring that to people and helping others be able to see this thing that was otherwise invisible.
Yeah. So You drew the pictures in the book as well, huh?
Yes.
And so, like, where does your art and your creativity play a role into you showing up for yourself on the side of mental wellness and being able to show up for others?
It feels like my magic. That's the thing that I do no matter what. Like, even in those moments of deepest, dark spaces, I was drawing in my journal. And so I feel like drawing is just for me, where I go. But I think everybody's got magic. Everybody's got, some people cook. I'm like, cook your Sam, cook your inner critic, put it into a soup, or blend it into a whatever, or dance it out, or podcast it out, or whatever it is that is your thing. And if your Sam says you don't have a thing, then it's maybe just whatever feels natural to you. Talk it out.
Yeah. So what would you say to somebody who's like, I hear you, but I don't know where my magic lies. Like, I don't know even where to start discovering my magic.
Yeah, I would turn it back to them like, well, what's one thing you would try? Probably whatever the first thing that comes to mind is something that will be okay for them. there's no right thing. And I think the discovery of magic is just that, is like a discovery. And takes a while, I think, to kind of uncover those layers. Yeah. I don't know. What about for you? Like, what was that discovery process like?
I've always kind of had something. You know, music is the number one thing. Like, if it wasn't for music, I wouldn't be here. Music, it planted the seed for, like, learning audio tech. Writing, performing in front of people led to my love for communication, for connecting with people and learning people's stories, because the way I write, like I write either from my point of view or from the point of view of others. Music was just that first thing that was like, oh, like even when I entered into sobriety and I thought I wasn't going to be able to do music anymore, because I had had a relationship with music, which usually included like getting high off of something to feel I need to be creative. And then when I got sober and I started to connect with my music, it's like, oh, wait, I hadn't even been connecting with my music. Like I created a connection unlike anything I'd ever felt before. And it was the closest thing, and still can be the closest thing to God that I experience, where it's like it's this connection. And then it's a craft. So like I like to challenge myself, and it's, you know, it's physical, especially when I perform, you know. So it's, yeah, music for me is the one. But in that, it's hard to explain. That's a whole podcast, because in that, like, that's the way that I understand the world.
Yeah, it sounds like almost the thing that there aren't words for.
Yeah. So like, even when it comes to sitting down and like learning podcast tech, like audio, like it funnels back through music, you know, connecting with you and talking to you and flowing, like that's like freestyle. Like everything that I've done that's off the dome, like that comes from like freestyling, like hip hop lyrics, you know, and you're good when you can. And so I challenge myself, like, how can I prepare myself to be the person that can go in this space and create a safe space for this person to share stories with me that maybe somebody else wouldn't be able to, and do it on the fly, you know, and do it out of respect for everybody involved. I think mutual benefit is big in my life now, where it's like everything I create, I want to come out on the other end with whoever it is that created it with me, everybody feeling like they got something out of it. Yeah.
Which I can feel as a participant in it, is happening. And also just that comes so much from your heart. The phrase closer to God really, really strikes me. I feel close to the divine when I'm in a room with people working on their SAMs. And to your point, to your question earlier about like somebody who's not feeling close to God or close to the divine, perhaps, or is looking for like, what is that thing for me?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's a question is like in your childhood or early on, those things like, well, I've always been interested in music, or like, what are those things early on? Where do you feel closest to the divine or to God? And maybe that's a question to start that journey or that inquiry on.
Yeah. Something to contemplate on for sure.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, an entire lifetime's worth of things to contemplate on.
But yeah, no, I absolutely appreciate you coming and sitting on this couch with me. Like I said, when I seen your name on the list, I'm like, yes, I've been looking forward to talking to you since we met in the hallway. Let's keep in contact. And for those of in the audience that want to keep contact with you, where can they find you? Where can they find your book and all the other cool stuff you do?
They can go to www.lovethatmess.com.
Love it.
Yep. And on Instagram, it's @love.that.mess.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you for sitting with me, Rosie.
Thank you so much, Bryce. This is beautiful. Yeah. Thank you. You're incredibly good at this.
That feels good to hear.
For bringing that spark alive.
Yeah. So now you're excited. Bryce, Liz, how do I get involved with the Phoenix? Well, my friend, it is super simple. We actually have an app. Head over to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store, or look in the show notes of this podcast, wherever you're listening to or watching this podcast, and go download the Phoenix app.
The Phoenix app makes it so easy to find classes that are near you, or to access our virtual class schedule where you can hop on from the comfort of your home. You can also join our groups and have a conversation with someone from the Phoenix community from anywhere in the world. Please make sure that you join the podcast group where you can connect with Bryce and I and other listeners. Everything that you need is in the show notes. You can also head to our website at www.thephoenix.org. And maybe while you're there, you click the volunteer tab and get even more involved.